Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast, Captivate the Room, episode number 25. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to step into their voice power so they can speak their truth beautifully while making a big impact. You can find out more about me at CaptivateTheRoom.com. And make sure you check out all my new voice programs. I've got some super exciting things coming up. As always, thank you so much for your shares and your downloads and just your willingness to learn how to speak your truth, but do it beautifully. Today, I'm really excited about the guest, Robert Kennedy III, that's with me. I've known Robert for a little while, and I've admired his work. I just think he's so top-notch in the field of leadership and communication, which you know are two things that I value dearly. Let me tell you a little bit about Robert. He's a people builder, and he inspires people to be better, and he helps leaders build better people. I love that. What he does is he helps managers and organizational leaders find the touch points to motivate their employees, increase their own personal performance, and create more impacting and purposeful leadership through communication. Some of his workshops, including Leading with Purpose and Built to Make a Difference, dive into the personal leadership tools we all possess in order to create maximum impact. As a result, his clients are able to build teams that work together more purposefully, more powerfully, and more profitably. He helps organizations through keynote speaking, small group coaching and consulting, workshops and training development. His background as a teacher, trainer, organizational leader, and business owner helps him to sit squarely in the seats of his clients and create a greater understanding of how to proceed through current challenges. I'm absolutely honored to have him with me today. It's a pleasure to introduce you to Robert Kennedy III.
Robert, thank you so much for being with me today here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to get to talk to you. I had the pleasure of meeting you when I got to be on your podcast.
Yeah.
So the name of your podcast is Lead with Purpose or Leading with Purpose?
Leading with Purpose, yes.
Okay. Tell us about that. How long have you been doing the podcast?
Well, I've been doing this particular podcast for a little bit less than a year. I started podcasting in 2014, and my first show was What Success Looks Like. And I did that for about 6 months. And then I wasn't really consistent as I would have liked with it. And then I started another show called the 3P Success Sessions. And as you can see, I'm stumbling over it now. That's kind of why I changed the name of the show, because it was Purpose, Power, and Profit. That was part of my logo. And so that was, you know, success stories of business leaders and how they got to where they are. But I shifted gears with that and started doing it weekly sometime around mid last year.
Man, you're an old pro.
Well, I've still got a lot to learn. There's some people that are doing it for 10, 15 years. And it's just that I didn't realize how long podcasting has been around. But yeah, it's been around for a little bit.
I didn't realize that either. I know, you know, I'm so new to having my own. I didn't even realize how many moving parts there are to this thing.
Yep. You've got the scheduling, first of all.
Mm-hmm. No joke.
Get in touch with people, then whittling through who's going to hit the topic that you want. And then you've got other people that are just randomly reaching out saying, hey, can I be on your podcast? And you've got to figure out a way to share with them whether or not they're a fit for the show, et cetera. And that's just before you get to the logistics of the mechanics of recording.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And then there's questions and show notes and tweetables and pictures and uploads and downloads and sent to the guest and social media. I mean, I had no idea.
Yep.
I had no idea. But is this your primary avenue of advertising your services, or what other things are, I know you're very, very in on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. What other platforms do you utilize?
Well, you know what? I am not using social media as the primary driver for business advertising at this point. I'm still using good old word of mouth, still using good old phone calls and touching bases with people at events. And that is the primary way that I really garner business. But the podcast is a way for me to widen the network and touch bases with some people that I might not have been able to touch bases with otherwise, either for logistical reasons, we're not in the same state, we're not in the same time zone, etc., or they just might be, they might not typically go to an event that I might go to. So, you know, that it's a way of widening network, gaining and sharing knowledge with a lot of different people. And, you know, in I guess in a roundabout way there, I've gotten some business connections and business work through podcasting.
You have no idea how much I just love everything you said. I just, you know, I'm old enough that I remember when you'd call somebody up and that was the way. That was the only way.
Right.
And now, you know, this I constantly feel, and I think many people feel this, the pressure and the new things are coming. You got Periscope, and then you got Blab, and then you got Anchor, and then you got Facebook. How, you know, it's unreal. That's what you would have to do full time.
Right. Right. Well, you know, you've got to, there are so many things with the way the technology is right now. You've got to figure out which thing you're going to go and use. And then once you figure it out, then there's something new. And, you know, now the rage is a lot of people are jumping on Snapchat, right? Mm-hmm. And Snapchat's been around for at least a few years, but now businesses are starting to use it and it's becoming a little bit more commercialized. And so now everybody's saying, okay, yeah, you got to have your business on Snapchat. You got to have your business on Instagram. You got to have your business here. And when people ask me, especially new entrepreneurs, people that are trying to get some traction in their business, they're like, oh my gosh, how do I do all these different platforms? And I'm like, look, you've got two arms. There's no way that you can reach all of them at the same time. So choose one or two, maximum three, that you are going to get familiar with and that you're going to know how to use. Just blow it out and make sure that that's the thing that you know how to use, and then stay there.
Yeah.
Get your platform built there. Be consistent there. And it, you know, then you'll find that you're going to gain some traction, and then maybe you can kind of test out some of the others, but don't try to be everywhere at once.
I think that's such valuable advice, because I think you just spread yourself too thin and, you know, you just don't do the best job on any of those platforms. So you don't get the traction, and then you think, this isn't working.
Right. Exactly.
And you give up.
Exactly.
You know, you really get a lot of mileage. You're really in with LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, that's my platform, because that's my audience. That's where my message hits mostly, because I mean, on Facebook, I do have a Facebook fan page, but the people that go there are not necessarily business leaders, or they're not execs in organizations. They're not the people that maybe make decisions. Those are maybe the solopreneurs or people that are trying to form their own businesses. And, you know, so the people that I speak to about leadership, about relationship building, about how to engender loyalty amongst your team, that those are the people that I find in LinkedIn groups and that have LinkedIn profiles.
And that's what you do. You build leaders.
Right.
If we say, tell the listeners what you do. That's what you do.
That's what I do. I build leaders. I really look at not just building leaders as in saying, hey, you've got talent, hey, you should lead people, but really allowing people to reframe their mindset that I'm not just going to go through life just kind of floating along and following the wave and following what everybody else is doing. I'm going to determine, based on the skills that I have, based on my what I believe has been divinely downloaded into me, based on my talents, based on the things that I wake up and think about every day, how can I use those things to create impact in the world? How can I use those things to make somebody's life better? How can I use those things to share the story of what I've gone through, my experience, and then, you know, take a step instead of waiting, take a step, get out front, be the leader, and make something happen for other people, serve the world, you know?
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. Do you find that there are people who think that they're leadership capable? They kind of feel like they're a leader. They kind of want to be a leader, but they're just not sure, or they don't know how to move forward.
Yeah, there are a lot of those. I mean, there are a lot of different scenarios. There are some people that leadership is thrust upon them. They're in their work environment. They're just given this title. Hey, you're a supervisor now. Hey, you're a manager. And they have no idea what to do with it. Mm. You know, they know that they have been given this thing, and now they've got all this responsibility, but they're, you know, and I get emails from people all the time, but I'm not sure what to say to make people listen to me or do what I say. And I say, you know, it's not about that. It's, mm-hmm. you know, doing what you say, golly, you know, I've got kids and I've got a hard enough time getting them to listen to me, you know, and to respond when I call their name in the first place, you know. Mm-hmm. So leadership is not about getting people to do what you say. It's about forging a path and being consistent with that path so that people can see the way being pioneered or the way being forged and determine whether or not that adds value or they're able to add value to that path as well. And they'll follow along, but you just got to be confident, consistent, and focused in where you're headed.
And that's such a great answer. And I had the question down here already, and you've already partially answered it. I want to see if there's more to that answer, but where do people miss the mark in leading others? I mean, that's obviously one way. They think they have this ideology. They have to make people listen, and they're right. missing the mark. Are there other ways that leaders miss the mark in really being leaders?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my very first leadership experience, or at least official leadership experience, I was hired, maybe about 22, and I got hired as a supervisor in a mental health organization that I worked with. And I was told during the interview process, or shortly after I got hired, that, hey, you can't be buddies with these people. You can't be friends with them. They've got to know who's in charge. They've got to know who is setting the pace and who's setting the rules. And so one of the things that some leaders get, or one of the things that's intimated to them, is that leadership and friendship cannot coexist, or leadership and intimate relationship. And when I say intimate, I'm more so talking about where a leader knows more about mm-hmm. you than just what you do at work, mm-hmm. right? So they hear, or it's said to them, that those things, those are lines that you should not cross, and you can't do those things. So people have this job, or this picture of leadership. I don't know if you've seen this graphic where you've got one that says boss and one that says leader. And the one that says boss has people pulling this rope, and the boss is sitting on this platform behind them being pulled. And he's kind of like the taskmaster with the whip. And then there's another one where the leader, the boss, the leader is at the front pulling right along with them, right? He's just the first in line, the one that's willing to go into the gully or the valley or wherever it is that they're going first, so that they can be reassured that maybe it's not going to be perfect, but it's okay to go that way because we're all doing it together.
You know? I love that so much. I love that so much. And as a consumer, mm-hmm. I have always believed the way I am treated on the consumer level, on the customer service level, is a direct reflection. Are they pulling or pushing the rock from above? I believe right. that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll share another story really quickly. I was a consultant for an organization. It was a big organization, international, huge organization, billions of dollars organization. And so one of the things that the first week that I was there, I think day number two, they put me on the company intranet. And so I'm going through the intranet, and the first thing I do is I'm looking for who the leaders of the company are, who's the face, who is everybody looking to and following. Mm-hmm. And so I went in and I saw the company, the C-suite, all of the execs, and I saw the CEO of the organization. And so I emailed him. I clicked the button and I emailed him. And the next day I came in and they called me into the office and they slapped me on the wrist and said, hey, we don't do that here. You cannot email the executives. You don't email the top level, the C-suites. And I said, why not? They said, well, we just don't do that here. If everybody started emailing them, then there would be a problem. I said, well, why is this email on the internet then? Why are you putting up this face? Why are you putting up this front of accessibility or of connection if it's false, if it's not real, if there's no hope for me as an employee or somebody that's being led or expected to contribute to the overall vision of this place? If I've got no way to connect with the people that are supposed to be setting the pace, then why make that perception, you know, falsely available?
You know, I've heard stories like that before. I've had people ask me, even quit in effective communication work, that very question.
Yeah.
And I was so blown away by the fact that that was even real.
Yep.
That I don't know. I have to think about that.
Right.
Because it seems to me like everything what you're saying is, okay, no connection, no intimate relationship. Don't even email me. How can people not feel like just a number?
Right. Exactly.
And is that what you see happens time and time again in these corporate places and beyond?
It happens more often than I would love to admit, because, you know, and I'm a people person. I'm a person that, and the big thing, my word for this year, and if I could turn my computer and everything around, you'd see on my wall, three words: leadership, relationship, and communication. So relationship is what I talk about a lot. And I really believe there's this great book, and I'm kind of veering off my thought here, but there's this great book by Dale Partridge called People Over Profit. And I just love the title. I mean, the book is a great book, but the title itself for me says, well, geez, if we are expecting results, then we first got to invest in relationships.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that happens? Do you know? Do you have a sense of just why that happens?
We lose focus. Money becomes God.
Okay.
And our world is how we gain status or how we gain cool points, if we want to call it that, is by the results that we get. And so sometimes people mistake the way to get results is by getting people to do what they don't want to do, or just, you know, getting numbers in place. You know, so that becomes the driver. And a lot of times in leadership conventions or in trainings, I've heard it, especially in when you consider that sales is the driver for most organizations. Now you've got, it's just a competition. How many numbers can I get? You know,
do you think fear plays a part in that? Fear of losing control, fear of, you know, not making the numbers, fear of being vulnerable. Do you think fear is any part of that? Or do you think it's just sheer drive? I got to get the numbers. I got to get the dollars.
Well, fear is a big piece of that as well. Because, you know, if I form a relationship or if I stop to be vulnerable for a moment, then maybe there's the expectation that I've got to continue to do that. Or maybe there's the expectation that if I'm vulnerable with you, then I've got to reciprocate and I've got to hear your vulnerability. And if I hear yours, then maybe I've got some responsibility to do something about it, or at least listen, or what do I do? And then maybe I don't know what to do. So, oh my gosh, I'm freaked out now. What do I do?
Oh my gosh, that is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, you are so good. This is all just music to my ears. And I'm going to come back to that communication component in just a minute, but I want to just ask a couple more things. Do you primarily work with corporations, or do you work with solopreneurs or entrepreneurs? Or are you just strictly, do you find yourself in the corporate world most of your gigs?
Well, I would have to say there's a transition taking place currently, because I did spend a lot of time with solopreneurs or small business owners as a business coach. And that kind of came about because I started getting a lot of questions about my own business. People were seeing my business grow. I'm doing stuff online. I said, how do you do that? So I started to share that information a bit more. And then, as I started to discover some of these issues or some of these challenges, as I consulted with different organizations, I started to say, you know what? I want to talk about that. I want to address that. I want to share it, because it's all of these people that have their these business ideas and these things that they want to do in their lives. Yeah, they can do it, but there's still these major corporations that they're going to be competing with, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are people inside of these organizations that have ideas and dreams and purpose as well. And so how do we get those people fed? How do we allow the leaders to really recognize how to feed those people? Because when you feed those people and you have them in their appropriate place, it's a benefit to you as an organization as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have a bunch of square pegs and round holes that you're trying to force there. You've got something that works smoothly and people buy in, and they're loyal because they know, they see how they can create something amazing as a part of this. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I was down in Austin, Texas for a while, and there was a real trend I felt like down there in that kind of thing.
Right.
And I'm going to use an example. It might not be the most appropriate example, but you know, it was Thursday night game night, and you know, they could bring their dogs to work. And you know, there was all this stuff that made it so, it just seems so connected to me. And right. So not, you put your blue suit on, you clock in at 9, you clock out at 5, and you do the same thing until you just can't take it anymore. You know, there was just seemed like such investment.
Right.
You know, right. Do you see a trend in that? Or was that just maybe something going on down in with those startups down in Austin, Texas? Or do you see that happening?
Well, I see the conversation happening more and more, because as we hear more about, And I'm not always big on labels, but as we hear more about millennials and how millennials seek purpose quite a bit differently than our parents did.
Yeah.
You know, there is definitely a trend, or there is definitely the awareness of a lot of organizations to, my gosh, how do I create continuity, or how do I create something so that people don't come out of college, get hired, stay here for 3 years, and then just leave. And now we're back at square one, you know, ground zero with this thing. So there is definitely some effort to see how we can create an environment that not only appeals to them, but allows them to feel like, gosh, I'm doing something amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
So it's investment on both sides, really.
Yeah. Yeah, but it depends on the age of the company to some degree as well. It depends on the awareness of the leaders, because there are definitely some organizations that do have the mindset, well, you know what? We're huge. We are multinational, we're international, and we've been doing this for 40 years and it's worked and we're still growing. So we don't need to switch gears.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I was originally going to ask, you know, how does communication play an important role in leadership? But you've already, you know, I already know you know that you're going to say, yes, it plays a huge part.
Yeah.
You know, do you find, beyond what you've already said, that there are major communication breakdowns? Is that something that you see? Is there major communication issues?
Yeah. You know what? Communication is a funny thing. Communication is one of those things that you don't ever get it just right. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things you just always got to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And some of us, a lot of us, we take it for granted. Hey, I'm talking to you. Hey, we're having a conversation and you're laughing, I'm laughing. So things are good, you know, or there's nothing major that's taking place. There's not, and I'm going to use the word divorce in this, talking about organizations. There's not this big thing where we've got a mass exodus of employees. We don't have this ridiculous turnover taking place, so we're good, right?
Yeah.
But it's always something that you've got to sit back and look at. How did I execute this? How did I communicate this? What message am I sending? And I forgot the book that I was reading the other day, but it was one of the things that I share with audiences now. Is it said, when people leave you, do they feel energized or drained? Right?
Yeah.
And so not just the words coming out of my mouth, but in the interactions that I have with the people that I lead, the people that I that are my peers, my colleagues. What are the things that I'm saying verbally, physically? You know, am I intentional about that? Am I paying attention to that? And am I evaluating after I've done it? What happened?
So it's that full on taking the audience, if you will, into mm-hmm. consideration as well.
Yeah, you've got to.
Yeah. Do you, now this may be putting you on the hot seat, but this is something that I get asked a lot.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Do you see some breakdown in communication issues because men tend to communicate a little different than women do?
Absolutely. And you know, it's not, I wouldn't even just say men versus women. Communication goes across a lot of lines. You've got gender lines, you've mm-hmm. got cultural lines, you've got language mm-hmm. barriers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there was a story the other day about a group of Americans that went to the East, to the Asian continent, or to over to Japan. And when they went, their Japanese hosts were very hands-on. They were close to them, and the Americans felt like they were hovering over them, and they were smothering them, and they wanted a little bit of freedom. So when the Japanese contingent came over, the Americans thought, okay, this is what we want. We didn't want to be smothered. We'll give you a map, and we'll tell you where the sites are, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you can kind of explore. And then they did that. And then the Japanese went back and they were very offended because they didn't get what they perceived to be host or hospitable treatment, So where was the communication in that? Who was supposed to find out what the expectations were? Who was supposed to find out how they perceived or how they felt about certain things before it happened? And so those types of things, we've always got to be aware of, and we've always got to figure out, you know, not just the words that are coming out of my mouth, but yeah, man, woman, language, country, you know, you've got so many different dynamics.
It's true. And I hear another one most recently about that. You brought up millennials earlier, and I'm with you. I don't want to label, but issues in the workplace, because the 24-year-olds just are not relating to the 54-year-olds and vice versa. And there's big communication, you know, why you have to pull out your phone when I'm talking to you kind of stuff. Well, you know, we didn't even grow up with phones, you know, but that's their existence.
Right.
You know, it's no criticism. It's just a different way.
Right. But there's still, I mean, using that example, there still are lessons to be learned in both cases, because despite the existence that I've grown up in, you know, one of the things that we said at the beginning of this conversation was that I still go back to the human element when I market or when I decide that I want to expand the business or I want to find more people to help. I still go back to phone calls. I still go back to meeting people at events. And no matter what technologies come about, feelings and emotions and perceptions do not depend solely on that. If I perceive that you're not paying attention to me because you pulled out your phone, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, well, she's a millennial. Let her get away with it.
Right.
You know, and even millennials to each other, there is still a connection that when you put it away, and, you know, there have been studies done, when they put it away and everybody connects one-on-one and in conversation and in groups with, you know, just human focus on the other person, there's such a great difference. Yeah. That's made, you know, so we'll never lose the essence of human touch and connection.
I think it's fascinating. I really, really think it's fascinating. And, you know, I mean, my primary area is voice, but I do a lot of communication work myself. And, you know, just the expectations and the blame and the differences and what we're really casting blame on. That's just the fluff.
Right.
That's, you know, not necessarily the core, like what you're saying is, okay, yeah, you pulled the phone out. You know, but it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, and that I think is fascinating, and the studies really are fascinating. Yeah. So let's talk about voice. Now, you've got an incredible voice. I could just listen to you all day long. I love your voice.
Well, thank you.
But let's talk about voice and leadership. How important is voice to leadership?
It's absolutely important. And when I say voice is important, I'm not talking about the depth of the voice, or whether you've got a radio voice, or whether you've got a media TV voice. It's the confidence that's projected through that voice, because there's a reason that there are leaders. There's a reason that people are looking to someone for direction. So, well, there's several reasons. So one of those reasons is because not everybody is confident. Another reason is that not everybody has enough experience to know how to navigate certain things. Another reason is that people might not have they don't have enough resources just yet to pull themselves together to do certain things. So they look to the leaders to help move that along. And if I come along, my voice lets you know that, hey, I may not know everything, but I'm on this path and I'm going to be there with you and you can trust me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're talking about politics, or we're in election season right now. And when a leader comes out and they speak in front of an audience, if their voice doesn't project that, listen, I believe the words that are coming out of my mouth, right?
Right.
Then it turns people off immediately.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, they've proven, you know, the studies, and of course, this is practically one of my taglines, that trust is built in the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the political scheme is a perfect example. You know, they just are doing all these studies on how they're using their words and how they're saying their words and the body language and all of that.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Now, you've mentioned the word confidence a couple of times. Is that part of what you do when you help leaders, is to step into that confidence, or do you find they're already confident?
That's a great, great question. You know what? People automatically assume that they're confident.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, a lot of times leadership is thrust upon people. They've just been in a position long enough that they said, okay, it's time for you to be promoted, or it's time for you to do this, or you know enough about this, and we're just going to put the title on you.
Mm.
And so there are a lot of leaders that don't have confidence, or they just self-doubt. They second guess and they do all sorts of things to sabotage their own, whatever little confidence they do have. And a lot of times people looking in on the outside, they don't know that story. Mm-hmm. You know, they just see, oh, this person's successful, or people are following them, or their department is generating this, blah, 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 blah. And they don't know the story. But I find that there are a lot, as confident as some people are, every one of us has a moment where we have a little freak out moment,
yeah.
You know, where we're not sure what the next step is. And you know what I call that? I call that growth. And I think we're supposed to have that stuff, because if I get to a point where absolutely nothing makes me wonder, nothing makes me think that, oh my gosh, I've got to really bring my A game or put myself together to make this happen, then that maybe I sneak over into arrogance, mm-hmm. at that point. And that's a little bit dangerous. So I want to always be at a point where I'm stepping out of my comfort zone and I'm stepping into something that I'm not 100% sure I can make happen, but I'm taking a risk and I'm putting on the coat of courage at this point. And so that's what I believe confidence really is, and how leaders manifest that.
I love that so much. I love that coat of courage. That made me think of, I don't know if you remember the story of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what that made me think of, you know, I just love that. I love that so much. And it is, the first thing I thought of was fine line, confidence versus arrogance.
Right. Right.
And that, I wonder sometimes if that arrogance isn't a different kind of coat, but more of a coat of protection.
Yeah, a lot of times it is. A lot of times it is. I think we all have our defense mechanisms as we work through this crazy journey called life. We've got these things that we encounter, and sometimes we figure that in order to protect myself, and most of us are maybe given this, in order to protect ourselves, we've got to strike first. Or we've got to put this thing on to dissuade people from talking bad about us, or from insulting us, or from from gossiping about us. And so we put all of that on to make it seem like we've got it all under control.
Yeah.
And you know, and the reality is I've got to learn I don't have it all under control. All I can control is what I do. Yeah. what my actions are and how I respond to the experiences in the world around me. And if I get that and I just simply decide that I'm going to take action no matter what, then that's confidence for me. That's being able to move forward and not being married to the results, success or failure.
That's powerful. That is so powerful and so true. And I think so far too many people get caught up in worrying about what other people are thinking.
Yep.
And you know, my response to that is, what are people thinking of you? They're not.
Yeah.
You know, they're thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And I mean, sometimes they are, but we just give so much merit. We give all our power away sometimes, I think.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know? So speaking of power, how do you lead powerfully? Give me one or two. I know that's like a 4-hour episode.
Yeah.
That's like way too much. But give us a nugget or two of for those people who say, I want to be a more powerful leader. Are there a couple of takeaways you can give them?
Well, I think the first thing is really being confident or knowing where you're going. You know, you've got to, whether it's the right place or not is irrelevant at this point, but you cannot be in front of people. It's kind of like a general leading an army, and the army, they're not in battle at this point. They're on foot and they're trying to go to the next place. They're in a desert. And if the general doesn't say, listen, we're going 212 degrees due northeast, you know, then are the people around him or her going to follow? You know, are they going to have confidence in the leader? Are they going to trust the leader? Are they going to believe that the leader has their back? And then if a leader makes the mistake, the leader still also has to have the guts to admit that, hey, I messed up.
Yeah. You
know? Right. So, and then I think the second thing or the last thing that I'll say is leaders have to be aware and intentional about finding out the needs and the skills of the people that they're leading.
Yeah.
Right. So if my only intention is to lead to get accolades and not to to be concerned about where you're headed or what you want or how I can help you be a better you also on this journey, then you know that trust factor diminishes as well. So Yeah,
those are good. That's all we can handle for today. that's all we can handle. That's good stuff right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just think you're amazing. I've just enjoyed following your work so much. I just think everything comes out of your mouth. It's just such a valuable, valuable nugget.
Wow,
and I just know my audience is just going to take so much away from this. If people want to find you, can people find you and hire you? Is that kind of how you work?
I'm easy to find.
You are? Okay.
I'm easy to find. If you're anywhere, look up Robert Kennedy III or Robert Kennedy III. I mean, I'm on Twitter, Robert Kennedy III, Robert Kennedy III on LinkedIn, Robert Kennedy III. Yeah, and I just talked about Snapchat. I opened up a Snapchat account the other day.
Did you?
All right. Yeah. You know, I'm testing it out. You know, I'm a little bit of a geek some days. I test out new things. But, you know, so yeah, I mean, I'm mostly on Twitter and LinkedIn are the two big places.
Yeah.
That I am. And then my website, robertkennedy3.com. So
yeah, I'm going to check out that Snapchat. You know, Gary V has just really endorsed that because I'm just getting on Instagram. I'm just checking that one out. But yeah, I think it's good to take a look at all of them and see what's going on. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is.
It's really exciting stuff going on. Well, I just think everybody needs to look you up and learn from you because you have so, so much to offer our world. And I'm just so honored to know you. And I just thank you so much for giving me some of your time today and time to my listeners.
Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I loved it. You've been a gift to me.
Well, thank you. The feeling's mutual. You guys, the show notes, I'll put Robert's information in the show notes as well and look him up and follow him and glean more about how you can be a fantastic leader as well. And thank you for being here.